Did Amazon ever say what a great bump in sales that you received? Or are you still waiting on that memo?
Still waiting on that. But I'll fill you in soon.
Oh, please do. We're very interested in hearing that. How do you gauge the SEC men's basketball from top to bottom at this point, getting into the stretch run as far as the regular season? I had a caller yesterday talking about how, other than Tennessee, LSU, Kentucky, you know, not a lot of depth. Not a lot of good.
See, I totally disagree.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
And I was just like you. I like stopped that talk almost immediately. But go ahead.
I think three teams are certainly separated, but I think it's the deepest this league has been. Again, I'll go back to the case of Vanderbilt or Texas A&M. Look at what Georgia did in the Big 12 Challenge. The bottom of the league in most years would be maybe tournament on the bubble, but they have run into a buzzsaw. I've never seen a season where just there aren't any gimmies for anybody, even Tennessee against Vanderbilt. There aren't any gimmies. Now, there's a lot of up and down play, because if you take a night off, somebody's going to take advantage of you. But I just think the depth is really good, and I think the difference this year, last year was good, and you got the record number of teams, but there was no one that you thought could win, get to the Final Four, maybe Kentucky if things broke right, but really didn't have any confidence. And I think right now you can say that there are three legit Final Four teams, and there are a couple others Auburn and Mississippi State, if they get hot at the right time, could make a lot of noise in March. So, and now start looking at what Florida's done the last two games. And these teams have gone out and they've played a much better non-conference schedule. And I think that's really where the bumps are coming from, is because the SEC is getting it done in November, December, and not just counting on league play.
I mean, when you're talking about, let's just look at the Big Four. When you're talking about half the teams, or even slightly above or more, half the teams, say like in football, top 25 teams in the country. You look at the recruiting, where 11 of the 14 were in the top 24 as far as nationally, as far as signing classes. You look at men's basketball and the fact that at this point, the SEC will be one of only four total conferences with probably getting at least seven bids as far as the big dance. You look at women's basketball. Currently, five teams from the SEC ranked in the top 25. If anything, the women's basketball is probably on the downside compared to what football, men's basketball, and certainly baseball is doing. And still, that's nothing to be ashamed about, knowing you've got in women's basketball, for example, and this is a year not counting Tennessee as well, but there's still five teams in the top 25 in the nation.
Well, and you're forgetting the most dominant sport of all, softball, where everybody in the league made the NCAA tournament a couple
right.
of years ago.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just loaded, and I think men's basketball is just now catching up. And look across the landscape. You could still argue that the ACC, Big Ten, and Big 12 are better. Top to bottom, at least at the very top, they've got as many good teams, if not more. But the SEC goes 4-6 against the Big 12 and the Big 12 Challenge. But that's with three tournament teams, Auburn, Mississippi State, LSU, sitting it out. So imagine they're in there. And then you have a Georgia team that beats Texas pretty bad. And the next game, Texas beats Kansas really bad. Even your bottom dwellers acquitted themselves reasonably well. I think Vanderbilt was the only non-competitive game. Now you take those three leagues, though, the SEC, the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, four leagues, now you start to go elsewhere. The Pac-12 is historically bad. You go and look at the Big East. It's not what it's been in Missouri Valley, which is usually four team deep. It may get one or two. Conference USA is only going to get one. So there is a real dearth of candidates for those 69 spots this year, 68 spots. And as a result, you're going to see some SEC teams that may be 8-10 go in there, because there's just not a whole lot to choose from.
I mean, right now, going into this week, Joe Lunardi, as far as with his bracketology with ESPN, 68 spots, right? The ACC, SEC, Big 12, Big 10 all had a minimum of 8 as far as getting into the dance.
And that's almost half your field right there.
And yeah. And that's right there. It's 33 of those 68 spots, and then there's a drop-off after that. Of the American Athletic Conference, along with the Big East, they have four, and then there's only one other conference. That's the Pac-12 with two, everybody else getting one. Now, the USA Today, how strong is this? And certainly you can appreciate this as well, that the USA Today, and this is one of the reasons why they have not one but two teams from the OVC getting in. And so that would actually be a rare thing, not just for the OVC having that honor, but it also shows you just how weak the other conferences are across the land, where they're not getting multiple bids in their conferences.
Well, and again, why is the OVC in that situation? It's because they went out and played people in non-conference. You know, Murray State had close losses to Alabama and Auburn. Belmont, of course, every year goes out and beats somebody, and that,
right.
And that's how you get your reputation. And again, if you go back and look at the November-December schedules, that's where these Big Four conferences really kind of distance themselves from everybody else. Now, what is to me, the one team that nobody mentions because of their non-conference schedule, South Carolina, which is currently, 9-4 in the SEC, but you look at the body of work, but they're making a case that it's going to be hard to ignore them, even though they're, two games over 500 total.
They're making the case, but when you look at the net, when you've got, going into this week, a net, we're in the 94, which is the new RPI that the committee will be looking at, that's not a good place to be. If you're in that,
it's not, but the problem I have with the net is there's very little movement once you get into mid-January. I mean, that's something I'm seeing with a lot of teams. You know, Auburn has struggled, but they've been in the 20s pretty much since the non-conference schedule, and they're not moving even with some bad performances. South Carolina is gradually climbing up, but it just doesn't happen fast like it does in the RPI. So I think while they're going to use the net, they've got to realize it's been stagnant for the last month and a half.
I mean, they want the best teams in the Big Dance.
Yeah.
I get that. But at the same time, you can't ignore, if the games are being played in November and December, you can't ignore them either.
No, but you can also see that a team was fairly inexperienced in, I guess with the exception of Silva, in November and December, and has now gotten pretty good. I mean, you can turn it around like that.
If you're Belmont or Murray State, right now you're pulling against Alabama. You want Alabama to lose to Vanderbilt and just fall apart the rest of the way. You want the Florida Gators' last heyday of this season to be what they did last night, and they fall apart. You're looking at teams like Indiana and Butler falling apart down the stretch. So just to make sure, if you say you lose a close game in the championship of the OVC, if you're Murray State or Belmont, you've put yourself in the position to, especially from I'm thinking Belmont would be the team that would benefit. They need probably to win the conference, and then Murray State, just because of the name recognition of their outstanding player, that they would have the luxury of probably getting, if everything is equal or close with, say, the eighth or fifth best team in a weaker conference, that they would get the love over a team like that.
Yeah, I think where they really should be rooting, though, is like the Pac-12, the American, instead of two, get one, instead of get four, get three, et cetera, because it's those SEC teams they played, at least Murray State, that they kind of need to hang around there, because that helps their net more. That's their biggest data point right there, is how they played against these SEC teams. But listen, Belmont, Murray, if they finish 1-2 in the regular season, and then particularly if they meet again in the conference tournament, how can you ignore? I mean, it's a good brand of basketball. You know it because you're there. I know because I used to cover it, and I've seen these teams over the years. I mean, I look at Austin Peay and Jack State are teams that should be on the periphery. Because
I mean, Austin Peay's right there in the thick of things. And remember,
right.
Jacksonville State beat Belmont twice.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, you're talking about a league that is – four deep, better than any non-Power 5 league out there.
having a chance once again to visit with Doug Segrist down in Birmingham. Who knew? You know, I thought everybody in Tuscaloosa would be focused on the upcoming spring practices for the football team, are still enjoying the fruits of being the number one recruiting class in the country. After Alabama fell apart in the second half against Texas A&M earlier this week, I saw a lot of things yesterday wondering whether or not Avery Johnson is the right guy.
There's a lot of questions that weren't around before. I mean, you've always kind of had a vocal minority that just, you know, thinks anything less than Coach K, it's just not going to get the job done in Alabama. But for the most part, Avery Johnson's been very popular, and I think people appreciate how he's taken this program. If you look at his record, his SEC record is worse than Anthony Grant's at this point. But again, it's the big games. They lost 21 straight to ranked teams under Anthony Grant. I think he's 14-12 now. Avery Johnson is against ranked teams in his 4-year tenure. So,
and isn't it like seven straight wins over top 25 teams or something like that?
At home. I think there's some frustration right now, and they are certainly underachieving. You know, you look at this team, they're one of the more veteran teams in the SEC. You can't say there's a sure NBA player, but that experience, there's enough talent there, they should be better than what they've shown the last three games. We'll see if he can turn it around.
Yeah, this is one program where certainly there's programs like Kentucky and Duke get to benefit it and know how to do the one and done. I think Avery Johnson's still learning how to do that at Alabama based on what they had last year and compared to being able to have a follow-up with that this season.
But I'll argue that until three games ago, they were actually a better team than they were a year ago. And now they've just fallen off the cliff. But they're better offensively. Defense is maybe a click under. But as a team, I thought they were better than they were at this point last year. And now it's just the wheels have come off.
But do enough people care?
Well, you look at national attendance. They rank in the top 25 national attendance every year. I mean, you know, they.
With the passion, though, I mean, do they expect to win to the point where they will force change if like this team doesn't get to where it needs to be? All of a sudden, now we're talking about the major hot seat again for Avery Johnson. I mean, do they care enough to be pushing that envelope?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, there are a lot of people who are just a little put out right now, and they think that in terms of coaching hires, Alabama's always underachieved. And not that they – listen, Avery Johnson has brought energy to this program. He's brought a great reputation. He has done nothing off the court. I mean, he is a class act. But I think their feeling is they kind of took – Alabama might have taken a flyer with an NBA guy who's not necessarily a great fit in the college game. Now, I don't agree with that. I still think he's a really good coach, and I think he can turn this around, but that's what a lot of the big boosters are saying.
Hey, by the way, before I let you go, Birmingham, one of the eight franchises as far as the Alliance of American Football, and certainly the big conversation piece this week is the fact that the league almost missed payroll going into the weekend. That could be a logistics thing, depending on who you listen to, but they got a big influx of money, and now they have a new chairman with $250 million being invested. I still go back to this league's not trying to be the NFL, not trying to get teams one day having franchise in the NFL, although they wouldn't turn that down. It's basically understands what it is. It's a feeder league, a developmental league. Players today in this league could be playing later in the year in the NFL. Your thoughts on how Birmingham is doing as far as from the fans' reaction there in the Birmingham area?
Yeah, and there's been a lot of buzz. There's been a lot of buzz, and it's been building. And again, remember too, you got the soccer team that's starting this season. They just played a friendly with Nashville, and there's a lot of buzz about that. But people are excited and kind of. You know, they've been burned before, so they kind of take a wait-and-see approach. But everybody I've talked to that has been to a game has come away seeing a better product than they expected. It's good football. And, of course, when you play a little defense down here, that goes a long way. You know, there's some star power with Trent Richardson, Quinn Patton. The quarterback, Luis Perez, is probably – the one that NFL scouts are watching the most closely because of you know, his story, never playing high school football and teaching himself to play quarterback on YouTube videos, winning the Harlan Hill in college, and then really kind of making a splash in training camp with the Rams. So, you know, I think people here like the fact that it's pretty good football. There's some name recognition, and they're doing it the right way. There's, you know, not a lot of bells and whistles, which we saw with the XFL. Not a lot of strangeness to it like we saw with the CFL. This is just good old-fashioned American football.
I remember, gosh, this was about 9 years ago, but Amobi Okoye from Nigeria, he learned how to play football by playing Madden. And and when I asked him about it, he stopped me and goes, "That's a lie, but you can learn an awful lot." And so to hear that story about Perez there with Birmingham kind of reminded me of that story, because he ends up having a nice career at Louisville, gets drafted as far as in the first round by the Houston Texans, and had a long career from 2007 to 2014 in the NFL.